Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 3.5. It's too bad you weren't here for the previous hour, where Alex and I talked about our birthday party Super Bowl parties. After getting Jim Brandstatter a couple of weeks ago, we were graced with the presence of John Buchacross on Wednesday night, and he said something that made both of us look at each other and roll our eyes, where he commented on Cam York's head of lettuce, I believe.
It was a red mound of lettuce.
Which I don't think actually exists, but so that got us thinking is, whose hair do you have on this year's hockey team?
Well, there's a few options. I think when it's really short, Ciccolini potentially.
Do you normally have short hair?
What's your definition of short hair?
Well,
I mean, it's not like yours,
right?
But
right.
I mean, this is on the shorter side for me.
Okay, so you grow it out. So, because you're a hockey player.
Not really.
Oh, you come from a hockey family.
Sure.
You have hockey
yes.
hair. There
sure.
we go.
I mean,
all right. So Ciccolini.
Triscott's is kind of close, except his looks like it grows backwards, where mine grows forward.
Okay.
I have to gel it
Ooh.
Up like this.
I see.
But Steve Holtz looks decently similar. Strauss a little bit. Jack Levy as well.
So you have, like, everybody's hair.
The people that have it shorter, just, like, a medium length. I don't have, like, the long Granowitz or... Nolan Moyle or Philip Lapointe that have it like
just
way
like
down and
flow
flat.
And
yeah,
like
no.
like traditional hockey hair.
Yeah. And
see,
like Jimmy Lambert's looks really slicked back too. And I mean, it takes a lot of product to slick my hair back.
Because it grows forward.
Yeah.
So when I was looking at that for mine, I thought Luke Morgan.
Right. He's got the shortest in
right,
the photos.
Right. And then he grew it out. So now I have no ones. So I'm just going to go with like Mike Trout.
Hunter Dickinson.
I think I'm just more like Mike Trout. I will just associate. I have his cleats when I play softball. So
you know the anonymous superstar of MGO Blog.
I'm probably the most athletic at MGO Blog.
I haven't seen any other people,
but that's
in athletic competition. But
I think it's a pretty safe call there. Anyway, so now that we've talked about we're going to, instead of trying to do more jokes and entertain you, we're going to use ad space, but we couldn't sell it. So now we're on to our third option, and we want to say that, okay, after next week when we recap the Minnesota series, the week after, we're going to try to do like some sort of like mailbag podcast, which you can send us your questions or anything that we'll try to answer. We're also going to go through and like define terms and terminology and things from like my breakdowns or your articles or just sort of things we talk about on the podcast, because hockey is not one of those sports that people are going to know a lot of like the specifics, what they're called, especially people who are starting to get into it, because Michigan actually has a watchable team this year, or we thought up until this week. So if you have anything, you can tweet at either one of us. I'm at Nasty Island. You're at alex.drain.
_drain. Yeah.
Oh, that dot is for your MGO Blog avatar, I think.
Yeah.
So, okay.
To differentiate myself from all the other Alex Drains. But
there's so many.
Yeah. So tweet at us. We may throw something up on the board as well. That
right.
You can reply to. You can also.
Yeah, you can make a comment. We'll check those.
If you sleuth our email addresses, you can email us, Instagram, DM, all the options.
Sure.
So,
but what we figure we'd do at least one segment going over basic terminology and why we think they're important, and then doing some questions on, like, you know, what does this mean about Michigan? And we'll answer them the best we can. So anyway, yep. That's our intro. Do you have anything else to add to that?
Make the questions interesting.
Oh, yes. And please ask us them. We don't want to have a segment where we just sit here and talk about what we did for the last 15 Super Bowls.
We'll just read fortune cookie fortunes.
Ooh. I've gotten a couple good ones, but I don't really like the taste of fortune cookies. Do you? Like, do you eat the fortune? Like, wait, okay. When you get Chinese food, you always get a fortune cookie.
Did you say you eat the fortune?
Did I?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
Well, it probably tastes the same as the fortune cookie, so it's kind of a 50-50.
The fortune cookie's fine.
You think
it's okay?
It's
not why I go to Panda or insert any other.
Should you tell people you go to Panda?
Yes.
Why? Isn't there better Chinese food you can have? You live in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, there's more authentic, but...
Or just better quality?
It's just for the orange chicken.
Well, yeah. Do they even have anything else?
Panda's one of the four restaurants I eat, so...
You eat at four restaurants. All right, we didn't do much else. What are the other three restaurants you eat at?
We'll reveal that next week.
Ah, there you go. Or maybe during our question and answer, maybe someone will tweet at you and be like, hey, what four restaurants do you eat at in Ann Arbor? So I guess we've been trying to delay talking about
Game one was fun.
Well,
ish.
It was fun for the first period and a half, and then it felt like Michigan was sort of hanging on.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that we'll get to later, and then definitely in the future, is the defensive zone turnovers and Straussman bailing them out again, but the start of the game was defensive zone turnovers where we thought they would be, which would be in the Penn State end, which led to the first goal almost immediately.
Yeah, Garrett Van Wy and Moyle connecting on that early goal, and that line had a great night. Van Wy goes missing halfway through, not sure exactly what happened.
And then he didn't.
He wasn't in the lineup game
play,
two.
Right.
He had lingering injury issues, so. I don't like to speculate. I had various bosses in the past say never speculate on air about injuries, so we're not going to do that. But regardless, he was not in the lineup, and in the next game
for the second game, and second for game, half a lot of the.
But even without him there, Raby and Moyle and I believe Morgan then slid into that line. They had a really good showing, and they were the most consistent line at generating pressure. They got the first goal, and they were just on it all night long.
And Morgan, I think, is a good fit to slide into that line because he's a hard worker who's fast. He can skate with Raby, and that line can then just use their speed on the forecheck and try to cram teams into their own end, which is what you can do to Penn State because they will, as we've noted over the last couple of years, they will turn it over in their own end if you pressure them.
Yeah, and so they played a really good... first period, and then continued. The rest of the team, not as much.
It was not kind of what we hoped for or thought maybe could happen, where it's going to be a racy up-and-down game. And you said this sort of to me, I think it was about half to two-thirds of the way through the game, where you were like, Penn State is, like, kind of turtling for whatever a Penn State can turtle. Like, it's, Notre Dame is going to build a shell. Michigan State builds a shell. They all do that sort of a thing. Michigan's done it in the past. But Penn State is going to just, like, kind of try to not be super aggressive. And I think it slowed Michigan down, but it also limited what Penn State could do offensively.
Yeah, Penn State definitely played a more conservative style in trying to keep Michigan clamped down. And their opportunities were kind of limited to when Michigan was coughing it up, more or less. Or on the power play. Outside of that, Penn State wasn't threatening a ton until kind of the third period where they start to ramp it up once Michigan was already up two goals.
Right, and that second goal was probably one of the prettiest of the year. Came on a power play where you had, I believe it was Bordelot and Brisson who had both great cross-ice passes, and then they hit a cutting pasta from the boards along the goal line, and he just skates right in front of Audio and just deposits into an open net. I mean, it was a good finish from Pasta, but it was the two passes to set it up that were just kind of like, wow, this power play.
I mean, that's a skill right there, and
yep.
Linking up, and that's what you expect when you have these caliber of talents on your team.
And after that, it was more, they took a couple penalties, and Penn State had some chances. I think my note on one or two of them was they got a lot of chances, as Penn State would do, but none of them were the looks that they're going to get in game two that we're going to talk about pretty soon. But then it kind of became a little bit the defensive zone turnover show for Michigan. As they started coughing the puck up, Penn State sort of ramped up their forecheck. And the thing that so far has been one of the biggest Achilles heels for Michigan this year has been just being able to get the puck out of their zone cleanly.
Yeah, Michigan just struggled with handling the puck. And Penn State continued the pattern we saw with Wisconsin, we saw with Notre Dame, and that a good second period for the opponent in game one. They had a strong effort there, but Michigan held firm. Straussman made some really big saves.
Yeah.
And Michigan was able to carry that lead into the third period, but then things just kind of got even worse into that third.
Yeah, and the one thing, I wrote this down earlier, but I think it happened early, but you talk about Mann making those saves, and I just wanted to mention that, like, I remember him making a really good poke check with his stick, and, you know, I'm sure he's done that before. I mean, you can't go this long without doing it. I don't remember that being very noticeable, and that was something that I saw early on I wanted to not only give him credit for, but think about, because that doesn't necessarily, he's been good with his stick in terms of, like, corralling the puck, moving the puck, coming out and playing it, but I've never really seen him sort of reach with his stick and make a play, and he looked good doing that too. That's just, I think, a noteworthy point that there are areas of his game that he has not been sort of known for or seen a lot, and he's continuing to evolve in that way too.
Yeah, he made another great one in the game, the next game as well, which I saw on replay last night when I was just going through it. So, you know, I don't know if this is an increase in activity with his stick or exactly what it is. I again, I'm not the best at evaluating goalies, but I think that overall he had a strong game all around in game one, and that included using the stick aggressively.
Yeah, no, he was the reason that they won the first game. So the other thing, and this may be more of a bit of a hot take, and you can dispel that for me if you want, or maybe it's just something we need to address, is it seems like Michigan has had a handful of not great second periods. And that goes back to even the Wisconsin series when they were outshot and sort of gave up a lot of chances. And then in the Notre Dame series, they had at least one of those games was when, I think it was the first game when they gave up those couple goals and then almost another goal. They just haven't played well in second periods, and that was the case with both of the games in Penn State tonight. And, you know, it could be one of those random things, but it also could be, do teams sort of adjust to what Michigan does in the first period, go and talk about it, figure out what they can do then, and then they come out and sort of stymie Michigan in terms of what they're trying to do and dominate play in that second period?
Potentially, but I think that overall, to some extent, it may just be randomness in,
okay,
terms of when things are happening. But yeah, I mean, it's a pattern at the moment, and
right,
it certainly was a much bigger pattern in game two.
And that's kind of the thing, that reason I bring it up is we're looking at almost six games in a row now where that's kind of happened. I mean,
yeah,
you know, and it, maybe it even happened in the Arizona State series. It's just that maybe Arizona State wasn't either capable of doing anything or at the point, you know, Michigan was already up so many goals. But anyway, and then like you said, in the third period, they have a couple chances late. Bordalo had a great chance, and they ended up then conceding goal on what was a 3-on-2 rush that was finished right in front of Mann. I don't think that he really had any chance on it. I think you commented that, like, Beecher and Lambert fell down behind the play, and all of a sudden now Penn State had guys coming into the zone, and, you know, it's 2-1. And at that point, I mean, I was getting a little nervous.
He was like, here we go.
Yeah. And then there were more defensive zone turnovers. They couldn't get it out, and it was sort of a precursor as to what would happen in game two, except Strauss Mann was able to just continue to make big save after big save until, I believe it was Beniers that got to the center line late and dumped in an empty netter.
Yep, Beniers gets the clincher there, and it was just kind of like, this isn't really what we were expecting. In terms of,
no,
this game wasn't really wide open. It was tighter. It was just kind of an unusual game to play against Penn State.
How was your boy Truscott?
I thought he had a pretty good game in that one. Second game, a little shakier, but it's kind of been a pattern of him a lot of times having to try and make up for various issues that Summers creates.
Yeah, and he is paired with Summers. And so, I mean, I thought he played well in game one as well. Game two, he could have, although it's really hard to say that many players, at least on the defensive end, and even forwards that had to come back and play defense, had a great game. We thought that we would spend more time in the second segment talking about the Minnesota series because it's going to be pretty big and addressing, you know, sort of what Michigan's going to have to do, especially with losing players. So we're going to move right along and talk about game two because I guess we're contractually obligated to talk about that. And it was kind of an inauspicious start as the first, as the puck is dropped, Penn State gaffs it around, and Ciccolini and Beecher look like they're coming in on a 2-on-1, and Cicchellini, like...
he kind of trips over himself.
And the puck goes somewhere it didn't need to go. And then on basically the ensuing rush the other way, which was sort of like a even rush or even like a 1-on-something.
It was like a 1-on-2.
And a guy goes to the corner and shoots from, like, the craziest protractor angle I've ever seen. And Strauss goes down and hugs the post, but, like, you turn around and looked at me and said, well, this is where his height comes in.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's just enough room over his shoulder to fit a well-placed shot. And one thing to say about Game 2 in general is that we had a BTN Plus experience. So,
which you love talking about.
We did not get to see the first goal when it happened.
Because they were focusing on any other number of things.
Yeah, and so it was kind of off screen. And
did we hear the first goal?
We did. The broadcaster was not a student. He was the radio guy for Penn State, which is why he kept saying IMG Learfield Radio during the broadcast, because they were just laying his audio, which is what they've done with Al Randall as well in some of the home games. So they were just laying the radio broadcast over it. And, you know, I thought he was a pretty good broadcaster. The problem was he was just a little over the top on some of the goals, which with this one in particular, we don't see the goal happen. And then all of a sudden it's just like, oh my God, what a shot. And it's just like, what?
So to be fair, Penn State's 0-5.
Yeah, I mean, they had been waiting for goals.
And Strauss Mann has been very good. So,
and the initial call was a bit much, but it's okay. But it was after that, he just keeps going.
Okay.
And you're just like, oh.
And you're a play-by-play guy for your moonlighting job. So you know sort of what that's like and what you can and can't do, and you were slightly critical of his...
Well, the big problem was that BTN Plus just set his levels at a wrong spot, because early on, and especially with that call, he's just blowing, you know, the top off, and the audio's coming through to the point it starts crackling because it's just too much. You know, bring it down a little bit.
I think we muted it for a little while after that.
Yeah.
Or I did. And then you were like, I want sound.
But... well, and then there's like one point a few minutes later where his levels just drop way off, and now he's whispering, and I don't know what happened there. And it was just, again, odd production. It also includes the strange moment in the intermissions where we just get this camera angle of the ice and we just see the Zambonis going around, but we get to hear whatever's going on in the stadium. And so there's those, you know, various things they put on the Jumbotron.
Well, like interviews with players.
And so like there's one that's just like,
and we're expecting Thriller to start playing.
And it's just like, what is happening right now?
That's probably when we should have muted it. So it's 1-0, and we're frustrated because it's a dumb goal that Strauss really never allows. Maybe it's a good shot, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, a minute later, you kind of track this stuff, which, like, I guess is why what we pay you for. But, like, you said that, well, we thought it was the Truscott Summers live that we thought that they were kind of in the wrong places, but in reality they each were checking guys and were in places that you should be as defensemen, one guy behind the net, one guy with a guy that was to the side of the net. The problem was is that it was a failed zone exit, and either Brisson or Bortolo, neither one of them decided to back check with the winger that came in and ended up scoring the goal.
So it's an unfortunate and annoying play because Penn State just dumps it in and four guys go off. They send one forechecker up. There's two Michigan defenders for one forechecker. The forechecker does a good job of tying the two guys up, and the two guys are Summers and Truscott. They finally get away from him. And so by this time, a couple of the other forecheckers have been able to start moving up, but Michigan still should be able to get it out. And so I think it's Summers that sends the pass over to Brisson, and he should be able to then exit the zone easy enough, but it just kind of goes right off his stick and is loose. Penn State grabs it. The real problem is not necessarily that he gives it away there, but then he just stands there. And Bortolo is also in the area, and he's just kind of standing there too. And the one Penn State forechecker who had come up to seal where Brisson was goes up on the play. So Brisson coughs the puck up, watches the guy that was checking him go up on the play, and he doesn't go up. He just stands there. And so then if you pause the video at that point, there are three white shirts and two blue shirts close enough to right. the goal. And then there are two blue shirts just standing around at the blue line watching yeah. this now odd man rush-ish situation occur, and they execute it well. There's a pass, and the one guy who neither Brisson nor Bordalot bothered to go after is the one who scores the goal.
It's a little like fumbling the ball in football and then not trying to recover it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and that's the concern of playing those two guys together, because both had things on their scouting reports pre-draft about defensive responsibility.
Yeah. And so now it's 2-0, and it's about 90 seconds into the game, and we're just like looking at each other like what just happened? And while I start taking notes and writing things down, like I kind of glance up and Blankenberg's shooting down the right wing and blows right by a defenseman, shoots and scores, I think, 5-hole on audio. And it's now it's 2-1, like 30 seconds later.
Yeah. So there were 3 goals in about 2.5 minutes to begin this game.
And it was like it was kind of like one of those things where you're like, well, I guess it's going to be like that. And,
yeah.
And then before we can even process that, Nolan Moyle decides to be physical, I guess, in his way, and he's already used up two of his, I guess we'll call them 3 lives or whatever, and jacks a guy from the back into the boards and is gone out of the game 2-3 minutes into the game.
I mean, this game beginning was a drive-by shooting. I mean, it was just like...
Plural.
Before you're even processing what's going on, it's just boom, 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 boom. All these things have happened, and you're just trying to figure out what's going on.
It's 2-1, and Michigan's down a guy.
Yeah.
And now they have to kill
a
5-minute major, which they do, which is not a precursor to the rest of the power plays, by
right.
the way. And at that point, you're like, it's 2-1. We survived an early onslaught, and we killed a 5-minute major, and you're thinking, okay, this is all right. Michigan then gets a penalty. I'm sorry. Penn State gets a penalty. Michigan gets a power play, and Blankenberg scores his second goal in the first period from, I think it was just below the dot on a nice shot that looked maybe screened, and it's 2-2.
The puck movement was really good. They got some chances.
Right.
There was a rebound. He steps up and wires it home. So at that point, it's 2-2. Michigan outplays Penn State the rest of the period. And
yes.
certainly after that first period, I was kind of like, huh, you know. Unfortunate beginning, but we settled down and, you know, Michigan should win this game.
And now the offense can take over.
Yeah. And so really, I had no idea what was coming in the second period after that first period. And even after the first minute of the second period, because Michigan then scores to go up 3-2 in a hurry.
On a really good odd man rush, this was a 4-on-3 where Michigan was kind of in a 3-on-3 but had space, because I think Penn State might have botched the... like the spacing between the defenseman and the forward, so Michigan could carry the puck in with 3 guys, and you see Cam York jump in ahead, and I remember screaming to you, they got a trailer, and they move the puck really well, get it to York, who they don't have a guy to check, he skates down the slot and backhanders a goal to take a 3-2 lead. After being down 2-0, killing that penalty, you're like, we're up 3-2, they get one more, and this could be a rout.
Yeah.
And within, what, like, minute, 2 minutes, something
2 minutes
like that,
about.
2 minutes, they take a penalty, and now it's 3-3 because they give up a goal that, not another great.
Well, at this, before the penalty happens, Michigan's got all the momentum.
Right.
And Mr. Penn State is really dejected on the broadcast.
Oh, this is your
pen. He's like, feels like ages ago that Penn State was up 2-0, and... You know, they were only up 2-0 for about 15 seconds because of the Blankenberg goal happening so quickly. But, you know, the mood is really bad for Penn State.
Yeah.
And Michigan's in a really good position. And then Penn State sort of dumps the puck in. They're entering the zone. And Granowitz just, like, punches a guy who's going by him. And the guy doesn't have the puck. It's not really a clean hit. He doesn't really obstruct a lot of them, but just, like, punches him. And I don't know what the point of that was. And it's an easy interference call. There's mm-hmm. no reason to take that penalty. There's, again, it's not really clear what he's attempting to accomplish there. And so now all of a sudden Michigan's on the penalty kill. And this is when the momentum changes, at least, because Penn State starts to figure out Michigan's penalty kill.
Which we'll get into a little bit later, but it's now 3-3. and the momentum, like you said, had switched back to Penn State, and then you get one of those brilliance moments of where now you realize how many super high-end picks and elite talents Michigan has, because Brisson makes probably, arguably, the pass of the year so far from his own end through, I guess it would have been a two-line pass, almost a two-and-a-half-line pass, to Bortolo at the opposing blue line, who skates in and dekes the goalie and scores, and it's 4-3 now again. So Michigan, and this is kind of one of the things, and you can tell me that this isn't really real or whatever, but I think I responded to you last night where this is like one of those plays that it's not really in the flow of the game. It doesn't really have anything to do with the control of the game at this point, but it's just one of those elite, amazing plays that they get a goal on, but it's not repeatable. And so it's not like Michigan is controlling the entries and getting the puck deep in the zone and moving it around and creating these opportunities. They're just getting sort of these wonder plays from these outstanding players, which is good. It's just, I don't think you can rely on that kind of stuff.
You can rely to get one of those per night.
Right. But in a shootout, you need a lot more than one or two of those.
My favorite part about that goal is how Bortolo blows by the guy, scores, and then he just kind of stops. Like, he just goes to a halt right at the crease. Like, he scores the goal, and he just stands there and just looks at it and then walks away. And it's like the Barry Sanders, you know, score the touchdown, just hand the ball to the referee and walk away. Like, I don't need to celebrate this. I'm just better than you. And he just leaves. It was really just a wow type thing.
No, it was fantastic, but that is pretty much the
end.
It's
kind of just like another day at the office. It's like, yep, I just did that. Now I'm going back to the bench.
Yeah, and if the game was 26 minutes long, Michigan would have been in good shape. However, they still had to play the rest of the second period, and Penn State had a little bit more up their sleeves, as we can go through those, I guess, four goals.
Yeah, so goal four is a situation which happens a couple times in this game where two forwards are up, Lambert pinches to hold it in, is unable to do so. Now you've got three forwards behind the play, and he does a good job to get back into the play, but he backchecks so vigorously that he kind of puts himself out of position, and so it comes down to sort of a three-on-three where Michigan's three guys are all like just standing in front of their own net, and the Penn State attackers are able to walk way in tight.
So just being very passive.
Yeah, and shoot from almost point-blank range. Michigan, because they've got three bodies in front, do a good job of blocking the shot, but it then takes a weird and lucky bounce for Penn State. They have a nice pass, and boom, it's right in.
That was the power block, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this is where, so it's 4-4, and this is kind of where it starts to turn, because this was the Pasta penalty, right?
Yeah. And he takes the penalty around the 10-minute remaining mark, about the halfway point of the game.
And he thought, I think he took this penalty because he was taken down, sort of, and you and I looked at each other like, hey, this could have been an interference call pretty easily. The ref swallowed his whistle, and then at the end of the play, they get called for penalty.
Yeah, and overall, it was a very interestingly refereed game where they definitely did not have the internal thing that a lot of referees have, which is that you need to balance things unless it's totally out of hand, because there's a run there where, like, every penalty is going against Michigan, and there's a lot of them. And Penn State's playing decently physical. Michigan's trying to answer, and some of them are dumb. The Granowitz thing was dumb. But other ones is just kind of like Michigan's getting pushed around. They're trying to play back, which is what Pasta's doing. And then they're the ones that are just constantly going to the box. And it also hurts because Michigan's penalty kill just collapses in the second period. And they have another really just poor power play goal allowed for number five.
And that was the Limoges tip?
Yes. And then right after that, Penn State, I mean, just within 10 seconds, they dump the puck right in. There's a problem with either Triscott or Beniers, but someone needs to recognize that a Penn State player is behind them, and there's a shot comes in from the point. There's two bodies with just one defender right in on the net, and they corral the rebound, easily put it in. And that's when we get the, it's an onslaught of goals!
From your buddy.
Yeah, and so at that point, and again, it's a little bit of an over-the-top call, but it's kind of what we were feeling, right? Where it's just like,
it was an onslaught of goals.
They tied it, now they're ahead. Now they're ahead by two in all about 3 minutes, and it's just like, Oh, boy.
And that's when they decide to pull man, and we see Eric Portillo for the first time. And then the defense kind of hangs him out to dry later on when there is a power play again. Penn State has another odd man or man advantage. And there's kind of a scramble around the net, and he kind of dives. I think he could have grabbed it, but he didn't, and the defenseman could have cleared it, but he didn't, and it kind of ended up with a Penn State player, as like sometimes those scrambles do, and it's sort of poked in.
And that goal was really the nail in the coffin, because I was kind of saying to you, like, okay, Michigan's down two, but there's 25 minutes to go and they're playing Penn State. Like, if they can steady themselves, there's plenty of time to come back in this game. And then when they give up that third goal, now they go into the, you know, into the intermission, they're down 3-7-4, and at that point you're like, it's over.
And then nothing happens for like the first 6 minutes, and then you get a Brisson goal to make it 7-5, and we're kind of like, well, maybe. And then they get, I believe, I mean, maybe it wasn't power play, they hold the zone again, and they get a wide open Jimmy Lambert at the far post, or at the dot, and he hits the post on a one-timer, and you're like, that was almost 7-6, and that was almost the game again. But
and then not long after that, Michigan pulls the empty net.
Which you need to do.
A Penn State defender hits it from the opposite corner, and you're just like, yep, not much you can do about that. And so then at that point, it's over. But then, again, Luke Morgan cross-checks a guy who's jostling with him in front of the Penn State net with 45 seconds left in the game. And you're like...
And Penn State is thirsty for goals.
Yeah. And then they come out on the power play ready to fight again. And the Penn State player toe drags right around a defender. Great pass. And for another goal that comes with like 30 seconds left. And it's now, you know, 9-5. And at that moment, it's like, wow, they are not done here. And that's where you start to get the rough stuff at the end, where Michigan very clearly did not like that goal, and there's like more penalties being handed out, and it's just like, wow, this is not great.
It's the 2017 Saquon Barkley touchdown
with
like seconds to go. So there are a couple things that we want to talk about with this, because I think that they're going forward going to be issues, and especially going into this Minnesota series. So we're going to take a break and then look at it a little bit, and then look at some Minnesota stuff, and maybe what else happened in the Big Ten or didn't happen in the Big Ten.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458, or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Sped through all those goals and the last couple periods because we wanted to articulate what happened in terms of like in chronological order. But now there are a couple underlying issues that we think are happening to Michigan or that they're not dealing with well that led to a lot of that. So the first thing I think that we can talk about a little bit is they turn the puck over a lot in their own zone and they don't recognize sort of... We thought their breakouts were good to start, but they've kind of clamped down, or they've been clamped down upon because of some of this forecheck, and Penn State's forecheck was as good as we've seen this year, and it's really put Michigan in a bind in both games, I thought.
Yeah, Michigan has just really struggled in the defensive zone to handle it effectively. They just don't seem to be very calm back there at the moment. And
this isn't one guy, right? I mean, this is
a pretty
collective thing.
Across the board thing. I think they definitely need more help from the forwards to some extent in helping these breakouts and that kind of thing. I mean, it would take a longer time for me to really analyze it and find what the real problems are. But I think another part is that the mistakes they make tend to really become A-plus chances. And
yeah.
they're not great at patching the hole once the hole comes open.
And they looked fine against Arizona State because Arizona State didn't really pressure them a whole lot. But other teams have done that, and when they get pressed, they've turned it over and they've created chances like you've talked about, and that's sort of what led to a couple of the goals this weekend, specifically goal number two on Thursday, and then the other one was that dump-in goal right after the power play goal. I think it was the sixth goal. The onslaught goal.
Yeah.
And so that's something that does need to be addressed, because if they aren't able to deal with that, like, they're going to face teams that can do that, you know, not only just in the Big Ten, but when they make the tournament, because good teams can have forechecks, and you have to be able to do that. That's hopefully something that guys will work on and that'll be addressed. I think that Michigan has, Mel has done an okay job with that in the past, but it has resurfaced a little bit in the last couple weeks here. And it could be young defensemen, it could be just inexperience, it could be lack of chemistry of just sort of this team building, knowing where guys are and being in the right spaces, but it is something that definitely does need to be addressed. The second thing is something that I don't think that you or I thought we were really going to have to talk about a lot, but really showed itself against Penn State, was their penalty kill took a dive, at least on the Thursday game, and that could have been a bad night, but we were looking at a couple things, and you have some takes on that it might be more than just a one-time thing.
I mean, this goes back to some of the reasons why defensive problems turn into these chances, is that Michigan as a team just makes no real effort to cut off passing lanes and
like
obstruct passes.
In their zone.
Yeah, and just rewatching the Thursday game, I mean, how many times did Michigan block a Penn State pass in their zone?
Right, so you're not talking about blocking a shot. You're talking about just setting something up.
Because all of those goals they give up on the power play are ones where the goalie has no chance, and that only happens if you allow the opponent to pass right through you, right?
Yeah.
The goalie only has no chance if it's a boom, boom, boom passing play. And look, some teams are going to pass it really well, but when that's happening three or four times a game, there's something going on there. And they're a decent penalty kill because once the puck is loose,
mm-hmm.
they do a good job of getting it out.
So if man makes a save
and it goes to the corner and mm-hmm. the defenseman's there, then they do a good job of keeping it out or, you know, sending it out. They're decent in the neutral zone in the penalty kill. I mean, they block some shots, and when the puck becomes loose, then they can get to it. But they never get the loose puck on their own without it being a shot.
Like tracking somebody down and pinning him and then taking the puck from
yeah.
him.
Yeah. Or just intercepting a pass. The puck only becomes loose when the opponent coughs it up, or if a shot is blocked and it's, you know, loose, or if man makes a save and it's loose. But just watching the penalty kill on Thursday, it was a lot like if Michigan's penalty kill was like you put four traffic cones on wheels and they just kind of go around the zone, and if you pass it right to them, they'll take it away from you.
It's going to hit the cone.
Yeah.
But the cone isn't going to take it from you.
Yeah. Or just four players without sticks. I mean, they just kind of move around, you know. Bortolo at the top of the PK will go out and he'll put pressure on the guy on the top, but he's never intercepting any passes. He just puts pressure, and if you don't do something stupid, you can pass it right around him. And then the two guys in the middle, same thing. They'll move around. They'll put pressure on different guys. But if you can make a crisp pass, they're not going to get their stick in the way to block it.
So do you think that's a coaching thing or a lack of experience thing?
I don't know. And this is the thing that we talked about last week with Notre Dame, with that first play that happens early in the first Notre Dame game.
Right.
Where Notre Dame just passes right through Michigan. And this is kind of the issue, not just penalty kill, but defense overall, is that Michigan just doesn't do a lot to obstruct passes. And if you're a high-skill passing team, you can slice right through it.
And we saw what happens when a team does obstruct passes and does break things up, not only with their positioning, with their bodies, but with their sticks in last weekend with Notre Dame,
yeah.
where they were very, very good at that. It's not just the trap thing. That is something they do well, but it's also how they play defense in their own end, that they don't give you good chances. They do get in front of their goalie, and they do sort of build their cathedral, but they also don't allow you, like you said, to just dissect them.
Yeah. They are good at just taking away what you're trying to do and making you just fire away from the outside.
And that's, you know, that can be undone by some one-on-one skill for sure. And Michigan's going to have their fair share of that because they have that one-on-one skill. But the thought is hoping that you're going to have sets designed for them to be able to attack some of that stuff. And on the flip side, and this is the thing that is the concern right now, is that they're not doing the things with their sticks and even their positioning to break that up from opponents.
Yeah.
And that's the and that unfortunately is the similarity between their in zone defense and their penalty kill.
Yeah.
And that's you know, they've gotten scored on a couple times on the power play earlier. I don't know that those were always the reasons why. Some of them were just nice plays. Like you said, when you have one extra player on the ice, you can play really well and there's very little you can do. But there are times when it looks like Michigan could be slightly more aggressive or use their sticks or have better concepts of where the passing lanes are and what other teams are trying to do. And that did not look like something that came to fruition, at least against Penn State.
One other thing I think is that overall this Penn State series showed the basic fact that the Big Ten is a really tough conference.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that every team, I think, is pretty well coached, and that there is not a Rutger in this
singular Rutger
conference, right? There is not Nebraska ball in this conference. There is no easy win. There isn't. Penn State's not a great iteration of themselves, but they've got a great coach, somebody who took them from club level to NCAA to then into the tournament and winning the Big Ten. I mean, Guy Gadowski's done a really good job there. Jeff Jackson's a Hall of Fame caliber guy. I mean, Danton Cole has done a fine job in terms of getting MSU out of the crater and back to respectability.
Especially without a ton of draft picks.
Steve Rolick's taken OSU to some tournaments. Granado's first season was really good, the last few not as much, but he seems to have a good team out there this year. And then obviously Motzkow at Minnesota we're going to talk about, but he has impeccable credentials from St. Cloud. I mean, this is a conference where last year all seven teams were in the tournament picture at one point in time.
Yeah.
And all seven finished in the top 30 or 32 in pairwise. I mean, this is a brutal conference. And Michigan, if you don't show up ready to play, no matter if the teams are young or they don't have as much talent as they normally do like Penn State, they'll still be well coached. And the same thing with Notre Dame. They will still be ready to beat you. And if you don't come ready to play, it's not going to be easy.
But also, because they're so well coached, if you have glaring weaknesses that you either can't do anything about or don't do anything about, expect those to be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And that's happened to Michigan a couple of times so far. So next, I think we need to, we talked a little bit about the Big Ten, but now Michigan has their much anticipated series, which is, it's kind of a disappointment because, you know, we'll get into this about how both teams are losing a number of players, but they're going to play Minnesota. This was the two teams that were thought to be the two best coming into the year, and they're going to play each one down four or five. Well, Minnesota's down, three players, I think, and Michigan's down five. And I think Michigan, we talked about this. In fact, we had a call-in question from Craig Ross where he wants to know what Michigan's lines are going to look like losing all these forwards. And I said, I would also like to know that. But I think they have the skaters to fill it, those spots, because they have scratched a few players and they have been dressing 13 forwards. But the lines are certainly going to look different. The play is probably certainly going to look different because they're not going to have as much of that eye-popping talent, and they're going to have to rely on scheme and system to generate chances, I think.
So Minnesota loses Brock Faber, Ryan Johnson, and Jackson Lacombe, who are all second or first round picks, all defensemen, and they're not the guys that are high up on the score sheet, but part of the way Minnesota plays is the strength of their defense and how that allows the offense to play.
Mm-hmm.
And when you lose three defenders there, who I think you can make the case are the best defensemen on the team, Mike Koster is also pretty good, and Stoddicher as well, but that's some losses for them. And then Michigan loses Beecher, which...
He's underperformed, I would say, this
year. Yeah. Brisson, same thing. Pretty good, but,
he's been good on...
Up and down.
He's done some things like power play, puck movement. He has a shot, but he's also fumbled a couple pucks in the zone. And as you noted, taken a number of minor penalties.
Cam York.
Again, sort of the same thing, where he's made some plays in the offensive end. He's scored that really nice goal, but he's been one of the culprits of a lot of these defensive zone turnovers.
The big concern is that it's Beniers and Bortolo.
Yeah.
Who are your two best offensive creators. So Michigan's losing some of the strengths of their team, which is offense, and the guys that create it. Minnesota's losing some players that are the strengths of their team in the defense, and the players who really fortify that. So both teams, you know, are playing with a hand tied behind their back, more or less. And that definitely makes it intriguing. And it's a huge series. I'll just say that.
It is, because Minnesota has yet to drop a game to anyone and has a ton of points. And while it is still early, and there are plenty of games to be played, don't get me wrong, but they're out to a nice lead. And even a split this weekend, which Michigan at least needs, doesn't need, but I mean, in some ways needs, I mean, doesn't gain any ground.
It's also just a fact of the matter that 7-3 is very different than 5-5. Just from a psychological standpoint, from how we evaluate the team.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Under Mel Pearson's time here, the first three seasons, you know, his second year, we never really got a chance to see what was going to happen in the second half because the Norris injury was so catastrophic.
Yeah.
But the first and the third seasons, you have a team that's just reeling into Christmas. I mean, you know, both times just on a total losing streak going into the break.
Losing to bad teams.
Yep. And then they come out after the World Juniors and, you know, it's just the world set on fire. And
well, their backs are against the wall and it's like, we have to win out. And then they almost do, which is like kind of crazy when you think about it.
If the general baseline assumption then is that the team will improve dramatically after the World Juniors, or at least improve in some capacity, it really helps to come from a position where you're not
already in a big hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which they won't be even if they're 5-5, but if they're at 7-3, it's a situation of, okay, we're in a pretty good spot and now we can turn it on.
Oh,
and we can tighten some screws and it's, you know, that kind of thing.
If they win both these games, I think they're in a really good position. The thing is like, can they win one of these games? Can they win? Can they get 4 points? Can they, you know, can they make up some ground or at least hold even, just because they're losing basically the reasons why they've been able to score the way that they have? And so then that leads to my sort of thought and question. You know, in the last couple of years, Michigan's been effective being a more defensive-minded team and being more of a bit of a trap team at times, and a sort of a protect the net starting from the goalie and working your way out. Do they need to go back to that? Because they've not really done that this year. They've been more of a high-flying attack, let's go get goals type of a team. But now they lose most all of the guys that they do that with.
I think you do have to tighten it up a little bit. I mean, you still have Kent Johnson, and maybe this is his time to really step up. In terms of being an offensive creator, you may have to shift him to center, which he played some of in the BCHL. Outside of that, you have Van Wy, who can play center as long as he's healthy.
Yeah.
You have Morgan, who can play center.
Yep.
You slot in Grohl, who we haven't seen at all. You can slot in Lapointe. Defensively, you're probably fine. York out, slide Karen in. We've seen enough of him to feel okay about that.
Yep.
And you still have defensemen who can create in terms of Blankenberg. He'll take a bigger role. Power, I think, will have to take a bigger role. Defensively, I think you can be okay. I do think you have to kind of play a little bit more defensive. I think trying to open it up with this group necessarily might be kind of dangerous.
Yeah. I assume we're going to see Mann. I mean, we didn't really get into this. You know, we talked about him getting pulled. That was not, in my opinion, maybe you have a different one, but in my opinion, I don't think they pulled him because Mann's having a bad game.
No,
I think
that was,
he was being abandoned and we're like, all right, we're not just going to keep dumping on this guy.
That game was, I believe, one day after the 25-year anniversary of the famous game where Patrick Roy is left in for 10 goals. And that's exactly why they pulled him. When you have a good goalie and the good goalie is being hung out to dry, you pull them.
So he didn't transfer to Denver?
Yeah, you don't leave him in there for that to happen, because goalie, like kicker, is such a psychological position.
Yeah.
And you just can't let that happen. So they yank him out because he's being hung out to dry.
Right. And I think, you know, he'll play. I mean, his counterpart is a guy that we watched for a couple of years who's having a phenomenal start. Like you said to me in prep, like, you know, I don't know how seriously to take these numbers, but the reality is he's giving up 1.17 goals per game. He's 6-0 and his save percentage is like 0.956.
I mean, if you look at the stats that Minnesota has produced through six games, you'd think they're the best college hockey team of all time. Like, there's not a single stat that looks bad at the moment. They have played near perfect.
How many power play goals have they given up?
Is it still zero?
It's still zero. Yeah. Their PK is at 100% right now.
I mean, Scott Reedy scored 5 goals in the first 6 games, 1 in each one except for 1 game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just across the board, Sample Ranta at 3 goals through 6 games, and they're scoring a lot. They're not allowing any goals. I mean, maybe they are a really great team, but even really great teams aren't going to put up those numbers across the full season.
Nope. And so they've done everything right. So you have to think at some point there's going to be some regression to the mean, assuming that this is way above their mean. So, you know, I don't really know what to think of this because Michigan, I've never seen Michigan give up 9 goals before. And I've been watching probably for about 15 years. And I mean, they've had some teams that have not had good defenses, but they've never given up 9. This is going to be a response weekend. Or we don't do weekends anymore. I guess we just do midweek games. So it's going to be a big chance for them tomorrow night. You hope that the team is ready to play, that they respond well. They responded decently well to the Notre Dame debacle of the week before and came out and looked, well, they won, I guess, on Wednesday. Still, the defensive issues crept up, but they need that kind of response again, at least. And, you know, like you said, Minnesota's down 3 of their defensemen, so you have to think that the guys coming in are not going to be quite as good, and there is going to be some to take advantage of on the back end. And LaFontaine, so he has good numbers, but you and I watched him play at times, and there's a couple times he gave up goals where you're just like, I mean, that's not a great goal.
My sense is that his numbers are sterling, and having watched the games, because the team's playing really well, and he's not facing a ton of great shots because the defense is so good, and now they lose half the defense.
And they've also played... They've also hosted Penn State, and they've hosted Ohio State.
We didn't lose to Penn State.
It's true. And they've hosted Ohio State on their first 2 games of the year and pretty much blew them out of the water. Yep. And then they went to Munn last weekend, and I think...
a close game on
the
Friday.
Second game.
Yeah.
And the first game, I think, was more of a convincing win. But so they haven't played the teams that Michigan has played in terms of the Notre Dame, who presents a tough matchup, and the Wisconsin, who probably can skate with you. Although now Wisconsin has their issues of guys that are missing due to...
Well, they've got a COVID outbreak. Their games this week are postponed.
Right.
Caulfield's now off to the World Juniors. Holloway was already taken.
I mean, right.
Wisconsin just needs to not play for a while to get their roster back in order.
Right. So, you know, I think that there is a little bit of that level of competition that can come into to play for Minnesota. The question is what is Michigan going to offer, and will they tighten up some of those defensive turnovers? Because when you turn it over in your own end, like, you don't need to be Wayne Gretzky to score a bunch of goals. I mean, you just need a sliver of a shot. And, you know, Mann will save his fair share of them, but, you know, you can't just give away those grade A chances, especially with a team that, you know, and like you said, and this comes back to playing more defensively and sitting back a little bit more is, you know, I think that they will have a chance to take advantage of that defense a little bit more if they can catch them out, getting caught out, you know, instead of just trying to push and push and push and then making a mistake and giving away a goal in a situation where, you know, it might not be necessary.
Well, it's gut check time. I mean, that's what you can kind of say about this. This is a huge moment, a huge series, a team that has hit some adversity, and now we'll see what they're made of. I mean, how do they come out? It's a different roster, but it'll be different for both teams. And, I mean, this is one of those turning points, right? I mean, this is a moment that can define a season.
And both games are on TV. They're both on BTN, so you don't have to, like, worry
they
about...
They keep moving the times around.
Yeah, it's 8:30 tomorrow night, which...
I think
it
got moved to up to 8.
You got moved up to 8 on Tuesday?
Yeah, that's what I read.
Okay, and then 6:30 on Wednesday. So they're both available on television. If you would like to watch them, we would encourage you to do so, because then you will have questions for us that you can then send us. in the following week when we do our explanatory hockey cast. Anything else you have?
Not really.
All right. I guess we'll end this podcast.
Thank you for listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 3.5. Come back next week. Less BTN Plus, more Minnesota.